Coming up, the Asus Transformer Book Trio. We've got a laptop, two of the hottest full-frame cameras on the market, and a pen that draws 3D designs. It's time to watch before you buy.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Before You Buy is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
That's cool. So who drew these 3D designs?
Tony did.
Tony, we're going to see that in just a little bit. The 3Doodler. I've been very interested in this. Welcome to Before You Buy. This is the product review show where we get some of the greatest, latest products in the studio, and we let our talented staff take a look at them and really use them as real people would use them, to give them some real world, to give you some real world reviews. We're going to kick things off with Radford Castro, our engineering director. He took a look at the latest Asus Transformer. This is the Transformer Book Trio. Radford?
Hi, I'm Radford Castro, and this is the review of the Asus Transformer Book Trio, also known as the TX201LA. Asus touts this thing as a laptop, a tablet, a desktop PC, whatever you want it to be. Here's Windows, and as soon as I undock it, bam, it's Android. Check that out. But what is the experience like with a 3-in-1 laptop hybrid? Some may see this thing as an ingenious contraption or an annoying chameleon. When you look at the box, it's easy to think this is a Windows machine. Ironically, the Intel Inside logo and the Windows Start screen tease buyers into thinking it's only a full Windows machine with a detachable tablet. Once the tablet is undocked, bam, it's Android. Why? Well, Windows sits in a hard drive that's inside a keyboard trackpad of the machine, while Android sits in the drive space in the tablet hardware. The tablet has its own specs, while the keyboard dock has another. In concept, it sounds like a win-win situation. Android provides you a gateway of consumer apps, while Windows provides you a chance to do some work with Office and play with a ton of legacy apps. The keyboard also works well with Android, and it even uses the Windows key to head home and even touchpad gestures to navigate through the screens. When the keyboard and tablet are paired, you feel that other companies should follow. It seems like a no-brainer. That is, until you discover some weird things. For instance, you can't use the rear camera when it's docked. It just doesn't work. It's only meant for the tablet. The storage cannot be accessed between the two operating systems, except for a couple of things like SD card, which, ironically, you'll have to plug into the other when doing so. The primary operating system is Android, with Windows becoming secondary. The reason being is that Android can be used as a tablet and a laptop, but with Windows, you can only use it as a laptop. Choosing Wi-Fi settings still has to be done with both operating systems. Hard drive is still not an SSD, so performance suffers a lot, especially when you're running Windows 8.1. Switching between the two operating systems is a seamless affair. That is, until one of the units loses power, which appears to be the case for both the tablet and the keyboard hybrid. Now, neither OS peers into the battery life of the other. Making it much more worse is the fact that the battery life does not appear to be one of its strengths for both the tablet and as a hybrid laptop. The big positive, though, is that, of course, you get two operating systems, and one of them is a full Windows experience on one side. The second thing is that it does have a PC station mode, allowing you to connect to the machine to a monitor. But of course, this works best only on Windows. If you're a Windows person, this is a don't buy. And if you are an Android person, you may feel like this is a try, but the price forces you to be mostly a don't buy. And at $14.99, this is pretty pricey if you're looking for just Android. And for Windows and Android together, it just seems confusing to use together as you get deep into it. The pros is, it has a clean design, has a nice quality, switching between the operating systems is seamless. The docking is easy, and there is definitely strong performance on both the tablet and the laptop. The cons thing is that at 3.7 pounds, it's heavy, especially as a hybrid. Thing two is that it has average battery life. And at 90% battery life, you're looking at 2 to 3 hours, unfortunately. And that's all thanks to the hard drive. And the thing too is that it's expensive. At $14.99 is just way too much for both operating systems. If you're looking for something that's purely Windows or Android, this is probably going to be a bad experiment for you. Instead, you should look elsewhere for something that's more purely of each of those operating systems. And again, I'm Radford Castro for Before You Buy.
All right, a don't buy on the Asus. I think these are really interesting products, but, you know, you got to get it right in every respect. It's such a competitive market these days. In fact, speaking of which, we've got another Windows 8 device. This is the 2014 edition of a very popular Dell 13-inch, the XPS. Shannon Morse, our producer, has it. Is that it right there?
This is it. The Dell XPS 13. This is the 2014 edition of it. They did quite a few updates with this one. First off, they upgraded the CPU, of course, to a fourth-gen processor. They also upgraded the screen, which is probably the biggest deal about this one. It's a nice full HD screen.
1080p.
And it's also touchscreen. Yeah.
Nice, yeah.
It's so pretty.
And this is an ultrabook. Battery. It looks very thin and light, right?
It is. Oh, yeah. My gosh. It's 3 pounds.
Wow.
That's it.
Yeah.
And it's super small. You wouldn't think this is 13 inches because compared to something like the MacBook Air.
That's a 13-inch MacBook.
These are both 13 inches, wow. But they look just a little bit different. Yeah. See that size difference?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So this one is...
it's also higher res than the MacBook
It is Air. Higher.
Yeah.
So this one is a 1920 by 1080 full HD screen. It is so pretty. I totally like this one. It was absolutely gorgeous when I was playing with it. Let me turn it back.
Dell, like a lot of companies, has adapted that Mac-style chiclet keyboard.
Yes.
How do you feel about that? I mean, compared to something like the Lenovo ThinkPad.
I actually had no problems with the keyboard. I liked it a lot. It was very easy to use. It was super simple. I feel like this top row up here, this is why it's such a small...
The function keys.
Yeah, the function keys up at the top are a little bit too small for myself. But that's just a personal taste.
Yeah.
This is backlit, so it's really nice to see everything, especially when it's dark out. And even the touchpad is nice and smooth. So I know a lot of people had problems with the touchpad in the past. They also made this a lot easier to use. As far as the format of this guy goes, it's aluminum on the top. So it feels kind of plasticky and cheap. But the bottom is carbon fiber. Really, really nice carbon fiber. So it's really nice, and that also adds to the weight of it. Why it's only 3 pounds. So it's super lightweight. The screen, of course, is beautiful. It's really, really bright. It's very easy to use, and it's very fluid, too. I didn't notice any kind of lag or any issues with that. So I know that the processor is definitely doing what it's supposed to be doing.
In this one, we have a Haswell fourth generation.
Yes, Haswell fourth gen, and the one I got is it's an i7 processor.
Oh, so top of the line.
Yeah,
here.
It's top of the line. Now, with that top of the line also comes a top of the line price. So the one I got... It also has 8 gigs of RAM. It's upgraded to Windows 8.1. It is the touchscreen, nice, full-res, full HD screen. And it has the Intel HD 4400 graphics included as well, and a 256 solid-state drive. With that
Wait a minute, let me guess.
And everything,
let me guess. $13.99?
Close.
$14.99?
Yeah, a little bit more.
$15.99?
It's $16.50.
Yeah, that is pricey.
$16.50.
Yeah, that is pricey. Okay.
Now, if you don't feel like paying that price, they do have a $10.49, a $10.50 version of it. It is not a touchscreen, and it comes with Windows 7. And they also have a version right in the middle. It's an i5, and that one is $13.49. So they have a couple of other options. And the 1349 version is also Windows 8.1 with the same touchscreen. So
the touchscreen and high-res screen does add a lot of cost
to it.
It does,
yeah.
And, of course, i7 is much more costly.
Yeah.
So you can get down lower if you're willing to sacrifice some of those
features. If you want to. Personally, though, I really, really like this target market. Like 13-inch, ultrabook, high-res, high-resolution, and the i7 processor. That's my deal. I love these kind of laptops.
I got to say, though, for people who've said, oh, the Mac is so much more than a PC. There you go. That's a MacBook Air competitor that's actually more than the comparable MacBook Air.
It is. But you know what? I really, really liked it.
Yeah.
The battery on this thing lasts almost 10 hours.
Good.
Yeah.
Love that.
It's a really good battery. So they upgraded that, too, as opposed to their 2013 version.
That's a real benefit of Haswell, of course.
The speaker is on the back of it.
How's it sound?
Right here. It's pretty decent.
Yeah.
It's very clean, very crisp. I was listening to a bunch of podcasts on it and some videos on YouTube, and it sounded just fine. It got really, really loud, and it seemed to echo out from the side, so it didn't feel like it was muffled, even though it's on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fine. I also took some pictures with the webcam, and I'll show you those. The webcam, again, it's just kind of a generic webcam that you find on all these Ultrabooks, so nothing really special about them, which is unfortunate because I really want to see good webcams on these guys, but honestly,
well, do you use it for anything more than Skype?
No, I would just use it for Skype.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So,
but, I mean, what else would you use it? You're not going to take pictures with
just
your webcam.
Skype. Yeah. But even so, I want to get good video on my Skype.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what if I'm doing a podcast on here?
Well, that's a good point, yeah.
So I like to have good webcams, yeah, or else you have to buy an external one, which is a pain in the butt.
Right.
So the other thing that I noticed about this as well is it's missing some of the ports. So you'll usually find HDMI on here, an SD card slot. Sometimes you'll find Ethernet, the kind that you can pull down. They don't have any of those. They have USB 3.0, power, of course, on the side, and a headphone jack. On the other side, you got mini DisplayPort and another USB 3.0, and that's it.
So you could use a mini DisplayPort as an HDMI app.
Yes.
You need an adapter. It looks like only two USB ports on there, or three?
Yeah, that's it.
Just two. Okay.
So lots of... lots of ports are missing.
Yeah.
At least it felt like to me.
So, and of course, no optical drive.
No optical drive. Yes. So my
floppy
pros
disk,
and cons.
No floppy disk.
No floppy disk.
I just checked. Okay.
My pros and cons. It's lightweight, under 3 pounds. Mm-hmm. Is a great deal. Excellent screen. I absolutely love the screen and the amazing battery life. You can't go wrong with getting over 8 hours, a little bit under 10. That's really good. And then for the cons, of course, the minimal ports. I would really like to have HDMI and an SD card slot built into this.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to buy an adapter for my
SD card. I'm surprised it doesn't have an SD card slot. That's so thin that you could put that on there.
Yeah, you could put it anywhere on this thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I really enjoyed playing with it, and I would totally take it home if I could.
You would.
I give it
a buy.
Yeah.
I'd add another con. It's a little high priced for...
It is a little high priced.
I guess that's comparable.
But it's comparable to like the Acer S7 and some of the other Haswell ones out there right now. So
it is pretty.
It's comparable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. That's a buy on the Dell XPS 13, the brand new 2014 edition. Mm-hmm. And you pointed out that it's not yet on Amazon because it is the new edition. But
yes,
maybe even by the time you see this, it will be. Shannon Morse produces Before You Buy, and you can catch her review, this review, all our reviews on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/beforeyoubuy. And, of course, we make the whole show available on the TWIT website, twit.tv/BYB. Now, I wonder, I haven't seen the review yet, but I see that Justin Robert Young is reviewing the Swan Eye HD plug-and-play Wi-Fi security camera. I wonder if he's going to say, Swan Eye, how I love you. Well, let's find out. Justin?
Yo, what's up? My name is Justin Robert Young, and this is the Swan Eye HD plug-and-play security camera. Works over Wi-Fi. Why do I want it? Because I have birds. Yeah, birds. You heard me. I got two of them. I like watching them. All the time, because I travel around and I can't just open my door and see my sweet birds. I gotta have this camera so I can look at them. No matter where I was around the country, New York, Atlanta, Cleveland, I could always use the internet and any kind of Wi-Fi connection I had to take a look at what it saw. Here's another great thing about this. You can actually hear audio and speak to whoever is on the other side. All you got to do is plug in a little speaker. It's very, very easy to do. And no matter where you are in, you know, the internet-connected world, you are able to send your voice out to where the camera is. And you can also listen to things. So I can hear the birds chirp. Hello, birds. They also have an app. They have a motion-triggered setting. And they have a little SD slot. So you can record what you have. And that way you can just record things forever and then review it obsessively. Like a weirdo. Like you're some kind of Howard Hughes psychopath, just completely documenting every second in your empty living room when you're not there. Did that dust bunny move? I don't know. Let's review the tape. Now don't worry. It's not like any old Yahoo is going to be able to look at all the things that you've set up a camera for. The security was pretty easy to register for, but you have to have your username and password whenever you want to get your peepers on where the Swan Eye is. Now, here are the good things about it. It works. It was a very easy setup. The app was very, very easy to download. They have a night vision camera, so I can see things when it's dark. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to see it. It would just be pitch black, a void for which when you looked into, you would not know where the other end was. Despair, solitude, loneliness, pierced with this camera. Here are the cons. sometimes, depending on the connection that you have, it'll put you in something called relay mode and will only let you watch for 3 minutes at a time. It didn't happen to me. It did happen to my girlfriend, Ashley. So you might just want to be aware that your mileage may vary depending on what connection you're on. Also, there are elements of the app interface that are not usable on this camera. So you might see things like moving functions. You could move the camera head, and you won't be able to do that with this particular model because I guess they have the same app for a lot of different hardware. So if I'm going to give it a buy, a try, or don't buy, for the price, it's a buy because I love birds. And I was able to watch them. Thank you, Swan IHD plug-and-play Wi-Fi security camera. I'm watching you. Swan IHD is watching you. Plug-and-play Wi-Fi room. It's the bomb.
Thank you, Justin Robert Young. Justin, of course, is the host of Not Safe for Work. Oh, it's not. I'm not supposed to call that. No, nearly say NSFW with Brian Brushwood every week on this network. And I should give him a plug for his scavenger hunt company. It's called
The Go Games.
He is he leads scavenger hunts for companies all over the nation. Thank you, Justin. Now, it's time for me and our good friend, Russell Tammany, to take a look at a crazy camera that we just bought.
Yes.
We both bought one. You first, right?
Well, we sort of, you know, these cameras are very similar. So
let's set you up with what we started with. Because
exactly.
You use a Canon One.
I have a 1DX.
1DX, which is, this
I've
is
reviewed that as well.
For a very popular camera that I use, very popular with pros. This is the 5D. This is a Mark II, but they're all about the same size.
Right.
We're talking big, heavy cameras, big, heavy lenses. And the reason people go out and buy these cameras is the sensor. It's what they call a full-frame sensor, essentially the size of a 35-millimeter
right.
piece
so you get
film.
You get a full, large sensor, but the downside is that then, you've got a huge tank. And the 1DX is even larger.
Right. So lately, we've seen a number of mirrorless solutions. Instead of having an optical prism that has to be moved up out of the way, adding to the size and the complexity of the body, these cameras now use electronic viewfinder, essentially a
right.
video tap that looks through the lens. And then you see what the camera is going to see through the viewfinder. We want to put this back on because the actual sensor in there.
That's the actual sensor.
You might want to put your lens back on there.
Over,
So this is exciting. As you mentioned, the NEX, I bought an Olympus OMD,
right.
Which is a Micro Four Thirds. Your NEX 7 is an APS-C sensor.
Right. It was a small sensor
but
as well.
Then Sony put the world in a tizzy last fall.
So Sony said, we're going to put a huge sensor in our kind of mirrorless body. And nobody had done that before, and it's exciting for a lot of reasons because it means you don't have to carry around that huge camera to get a full-frame quality picture.
Trey Ratcliffe, very famously, who had just recently given up his full-bodied Nikon DSLRs for the Sony NEX cameras, went the next step, gave them up for this. He is now, there is a point to be made with this, that he is a landscape photographer.
Right.
But he's decided, Trey Ratcliffe has decided to do all of his shooting now with his A7R. He was using a D800 and a D800E, and this is actually the same sensor as in the Nikon D800E.
Yeah.
So I think it's an easy transition for him to make.
Yeah, this is very similar to the D800. So you're essentially getting a cheaper version of that.
Yeah, because that's like a $3,000 or $4,000 body, right?
Yeah. So the A7, this body only retails for around $1,700, like $1,698, somewhere around there. And there's a kit version that's also available that has a 28-70 kind of zoom lens, but it also has optical stabilization. So you can get it in a kit with a lens, which is probably what most people are going to do if it's their only camera. But I'm
so
sort
it's
of
about $2,000 with the lens.
Yeah.
What are the specs of that A7?
So the specs on the A7 is that you get a 24.3 megapixel full frame sensor with 14-bit RAW, and so that it's already quite large. The A7R, I believe, is 36, but it's a little bit higher. You do get a phase detect autofocus, which is really nice in the A7 because it means that in the actual sensor there are phase detect for high quality autofocus. So it's a little better at, you know, acquiring an accurate autofocus or continuous tracking and for things like that. Does about 5 frames a second, and you have a lot of great features. The electronic viewfinder, I had this on the NEX 7, and it was a little laggy, a little kind of floaty and blurry, especially in lower light, and they've significantly improved it in the A7. And the A7R has the same viewfinder as well.
So the big difference between the A7 and the A7R is that this is 39 megapixels.
Yeah,
it's a larger, it's the same sensor, both full-frame sensors,
right,
but it's just a higher resolution. That's not necessarily a pro. You're going to get better low-light performance, for instance, on the A7.
Right, so the low-light and high ISO performance is a little bit better on the A7 than the A7R.
Yeah. I'll give you a negative right up front. There are only currently two lenses available. You can use the NEX E lenses,
right,
but they're cropped because it's an APS sensor. So if you want to take advantage of the full frame sensor, don't worry. That's just an $8,000 lens. It's no big deal. If you want to use the, we'll put that up on something more stable. If you want to use other third party lenses, you can use an adapter. I have, there are a number of companies that make these. This is a Metabones adapter, about $400 adapter.
Which I have the same adapter.
It allows,
so that I can use my camera.
And they make this for a variety of lenses. I'm using here, these are the same lenses I use with my Canon 5D Mark II. These are the good Canon L lenses with the adapter. What's nice about the Metabones adapter, unlike some of them, is that all the electronics still work.
Yes.
You'll keep autofocus. But what's not
aperture.
So nice is it really slow.
Yes.
So slow that you almost always end up using manual focus.
Right.
And now, that is one of the things that these cameras are very good at, is manual focus. They have one feature is an auto zoom on the EVF that lets you see very closely.
Right.
You don't have peaking in yours,
No,
do
these
you?
Do peaking
they
as
do.
Well.
Okay.
That's the other thing. I mean, you would think, you know, if this was a Canon would limit the features and firmware of what is in the A7 compared to the A7R, because it's just sort of what they do when you look at the different lineups of Canon.
That does everything
this
that
does
the R
everything
does.
That the R does.
There's a lot to be said, and I don't want to.
So,
we could spend an hour
stuff,
on this.
Yeah. So photo stuff, you know, it all really works exactly as you expect. It takes fantastic raw photos.
JPEGs, according to DP Review, have been very poor.
I don't ever shoot
JPEGs, so
I never
set
my stuff to JPEG in the first place.
Don't buy this to shoot JPEGs.
These are some photos that I shot. I've had the camera for a couple months, and I took it to San Antonio. I took it to Puerto Rico and to Paris. And so it's been my travel camera now. And I've always had regrets when I bring my NEX, when I bring point-and-shoot, when I
even
bring
the
smaller
NEX?
Cameras. Even the NEX, it's not as good.
Right.
And you don't have the depth of field. You don't
look
have
at the depth
effect.
Of field here. It's really nice.
It's really fantastic. So I can honestly say that I was able to go and use the camera and not think about, you know, you think about some of the little issues, but you don't think, I wish I had my 1DX. I wish I had a 5D Mark III. I can't take this picture without it.
The quality is superb.
And so not having that. That being said, the video features. I don't have a video to show. However, this checks every single box that you would really want to have for video on a DSLR.
Yeah.
And so...
External microphone capability.
Yeah. So you get external microphone, you get headphones, you get audio levels.
You can actually see meters on the screen.
See meters, which is missing from a lot. Mm-hmm. You also get, which is super important, clean 1080p video output, which means it's uncompressed. You can use a Blackmagic recorder. You can use an Atomos from... a Atomos Ninja or Samurai or something like that, Key Pro. You can basically get extremely high quality video directly out of the camera.
So let's wrap it up on the pros and cons. And I have a feeling we're going to agree pretty much on the pros and cons. So the pros, excellent image quality, excellent video quality. I guess you could say a pro, the fact that you could use a broad variety of lenses with this.
The third party lens adapters, you can adapt everything to this because it has the shallowest registration distance, so every single other type of lens is capable of being adapted to it.
But that leads us to one of the negatives,
which is no Sony lenses.
There are very few actual manufacturer Zeiss lenses, and the other lenses tend to be very slow.
Right.
I'll give you another negative that is not on your A7, but is on the A7R, is the shutter. And a number of people complain.
I've never heard that shutter.
So this is, if you listen, the shutter sound, there's a two-click sound. Right. That's one picture. And some have noted that it actually is such a big physical click, because there is a physical thing going on, that it might jiggle the camera a little bit.
Right.
And yours, let's hear yours.
So this is on the A7, and it just has a single, it has a digital first curtain. So when you hear that, okay, that's the end. That's the second curtain. So essentially what your camera's doing is it's got to bring down in front of the sensor a physical shutter, start the exposure, pull it, and then put it back.
Yeah.
And so that's why you get that second curve.
That gives you some flexibility, but it also jiggles the camera quite a bit.
Jiggles the camera. It also makes the response time slower.
Really feels slow.
So I've found, kind of just running around shooting with the A7, that it responds extremely quickly. And, you know, it feels really nice that way. It does have a long startup time, which I'm assuming the A7R does.
Yeah, this also does, really long.
Which is a little frustrating.
And you can't shoot very fast with it.
Yeah.
You got me beat.
Yeah, and I'm in continuous and like...
So, and that brings up another one that is a little bit more subtle, which is that if you put this in program mode or aperture mode, it's going to want to go to 1/60th.
Right.
And that is actually too slow.
Yeah.
For this lens and this click. And that is a software that they could bug, that they could fix.
Right.
But what happens is it's adjusting the ISO for trying to get to 1/60th.
Right.
It should really be trying to get to 1/125th or better.
And that's the thing, is I've seen a
lot
of complaints.
Does yours do that also?
Yes. And I've seen a lot of complaints about little nitpicky things about like that with the 1/60th. And it is important, but if you're aware of it, it just means, you know, I'm used to using the manual modes. I don't like auto ISO.
I like aperture priority, and you don't use aperture priority. You tend to use shutter priority so that you can force a faster shutter speed.
So
that's a little bit of a disadvantage for me because I like aperture priority. But it's something to be aware of.
Right.
It's a negative. You're right. It's nitpicky.
There's negatives, but the big nitpick is that I'm not confident that Sony will fix it.
Right.
Because I've had the NEX7. There's been multiple little issues like that, and none of them were fixed in the firmware. So
this is, and this seems to be a very common thing now.
Yes.
We're seeing a lot of what I call diva cameras. They are amazing. The performance is incredible, but it comes at a bit of finickiness and trouble. And I think for a lot of people, the frustrations might outweigh the benefits.
Right.
If you're looking for a really great full-frame camera that is light and compact, gives you great images, and you're willing to put up with some of these little quibbles we've talked about, I think this is definitely a buy. Mine, the second negative, is it's fairly pricey, although if you compare it to a D800, it's a good deal. You were going to show, I know, the Sony wireless capability.
Right.
All the Sony cameras now have this.
All the Sony cameras have the same. So they finally added Wi-Fi and NFC, and you can just do the old...
He's going to pair his phone.
Put the phone next to it.
That's a nice feature.
The Play Memories app will launch. And you've got remote shooting. You've got...
So you can trigger the camera from the phone.
You can trigger the camera from the phone.
You can copy pictures to the camera.
Yes, and you get a preview every time you take it. So if it's set up on a tripod, you can, you know, get it. And
the other wild thing is, because there's Wi-Fi, I can join our Wi-Fi network and without leaving the camera, share to Flickr and Facebook.
Right, so you get a live view of
that's
what the camera sees.
That's kind of great. But I don't even need to do that. I can actually, from the camera.
Yeah.
It also has apps. The App Store isn't huge yet. There's a time-lapse app that's good, but it's $10. You know, I don't know. Are you going to give it a try, a buy, a don't buy?
So I'm going to give it a buy. However, I'm still a little hesitant to recommend it if this is like your only camera, your first camera. And the reason is that you really have a lot more flexibility. If you can deal with the slightly larger body size and the actual, you know, mirror box, you were probably better off with a D800, D600, or Canon 5D Mark III, or something like that, and the traditional lens lineup. You have a lot more flexibility if it's going to be your only camera, and you should know how amazing it is to use a optical viewfinder.
Right.
But all that said, this is the best mirrorless camera I have used, and I've been very happy with it, and have no regrets taking it on any trips or, you know, missing full frame cameras. So it's a buy. You know, with those kind of, you know, you want to wait for the lenses. Sony's got a 24-70 f/4 OSS Zeiss lens. It's going to be fantastic. A couple other lenses will be great, but they're not out now. And, you know how it is. You wait 6 months, 8 months, maybe there'll be an A7R Mark II. So
yeah, that's why I'm going to say
don't
buy the A7R. You'd be better off with a D800 if you want D800E if you want no anti-aliasing, a 5D Mark II if you really want a fast through the lens camera. This is a really interesting camera.
Still get the weather sealing on these, so
it's weather sealing.
I've got this thing really wet in a waterfall.
We could go back and forth. I think so. You've heard enough though to know whether it's right for you.
Yeah.
A don't buy from me, a buy from Russell. We really agree more than that would tell you. I just think that you should probably wait for the next generation.
And I have to say that if you look between the A7R and the A7, that the A7 is a stronger buy for the price.
That's probably true.
And for the almost similar quality
that
you
get. That's right.
As well.
I'd agree with you. Yep. Well, that was a long review.
Sorry,
Shannon's going to chop this up into little pieces, but the full review will be on YouTube, and I promise that at youtube.com/beforeyoubuy. Before we run, let us get Tony Wang. Believe it or not, he made this with his own little pen. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the three doodler.
I'm Tony for Twit and Before You Buy, and today I'm reviewing the three doodler 3D printing pen. The three doodler is probably the lowest cost 3D printing device that prints plastic that you can buy in the market today. It's MSRP for $99, and it comes with 50 tubes of plastic. You can choose between ABS or PLA, and basically the difference between the two plastic is that ABS is harder once it's cooled, and the PLAs are more pliable if you're looking for, if you're making something that's a little bit more flexible as your end product. The device is very simply designed, plugs straight into the wall with its AC adapter. The on-off switch lets you choose between the two material, between ABS and PLA. And you have two control switches, one for fast extrusion and one for slow extrusion. And as you can see, the device has a built-in fan that also helps cool the plastic as you're pushing it out of the pen. It takes a lot of practice to get good at 3D printing with this pen, and mainly because depending on the temperature of the plastic and the speed that you're printing, it's actually a little bit unpredictable at first if you're not used to using this. Do use this in a well-ventilated area because, after all, you are melting plastic to print it. Pro, it is really, really fun and affordable. Con, it gets pretty hot when you're holding it, and it takes some practice before you actually get good at using this. So buy, try, or don't buy for the 3 Doodler. I would give it a try. It is really fun to be able to make little trinkets out of plastic, you know, little rings or little, you know, figurines and things like that. Real life application may vary depending on how creative you are. I'm Tony for Twitter Before You Buy, and this is the 3 Doodler.
I don't know. That's, wow. That's the strangest thing I've ever seen. Here's Tony's creations. But it's kind of fun to play with. If you can find a friend who has one, just use his. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do Before You Buy every Tuesday afternoon right after Security Now. We'd love it if you watch live. If you can't, though, on-demand versions always available, twit.tv/BYB. Email us with your suggestions, your requests, your complaints, your comments, byb@twit.tv. Thanks to all our reviewers. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time. Remember, you got to watch Before You Buy. Take care.